Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team appreciate you joining us this fine day in America on our 800th show. We are proud Americans. But here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Stephen Davis from Turning Point USA. We're going to be discussing racism. And then John Lott will discuss how dangerous America is getting and getting armed. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to welcome and introduce Steve Davis from the Turning Point USA. Blexit is a movement towards black economic independence by encouraging African Americans to leave the traditional financial systems perceived that have been taken advantage of the black community. Blexit was formed in Minnesota in 2016 as the product of community meetings after a police killing. But the Blexit Foundation is a social media campaign launched, I think, in 2018 by Candace Owens, of whom I'm a great fan, and currently is a nonprofit dedicated to the advancement of urban and minority communities by encouraging youth to seek and take advantage of opportunities in the 21st century United States. So welcome to the show, Stephen. Did I say that right? Am I describing things properly?
Oh, yes, indeed. That is just fine. And thank you for having me. It is quite a blessing and an honor.
Talk to us about your background and your role in Blexit Foundation.
Sure. My background is, I wasn't really into politics until 2017, 2018, for which I was a liberal, liberally minded. And it was one of those situations where Trump was on the scene and I was like, okay, well, you know, I was told by mass media, that he's this vicious, bitter racist and the worst thing for the country. So I was like, you know what? Let me do my research into him and to the right and all the political discourse and everything. And I'm going to learn all I can so I can go after these Trump supporters and absolutely beat them down with facts. And in doing so, I actually ended up red pilling myself and coming to the right, switching from left to right, especially when it comes to the topic of race. I was very racially minded. So now I spend my time combating the racial narratives of this country, as well as going up against the news media. So that's more of my background. And when it comes to Blexit, I've been involved with Blexit for a little bit, done some events with them. And it's a very wonderful company or organization, as to say, that really stands on the front lines of the community aspect and empower people, wake people up to what's going on, especially when it comes to the left and how they use the black community in every way, shape, form, and fashion. So it's just a wonderful organization that I've been able to work with, not as often as I would like to, but as often as I can. And I'm so glad that now they are part of Turning Point USA.
Well, I'm delighted we could do this. As I think I told you, I'm the oldest of three, oldest boy, three younger sisters, two of whom married black guys. So there are black family. When my family meets, we're mixed race. And that doesn't mean I understand what it's like to be black. I'm a white guy. And I do understand that there is and there has always been some aspect of racism in our communities, and indeed every community in the world. I've been around the world. I don't justify it in any way, but it is there. But it, for much of my observation, it hasn't been, well, let me put it this way, it has been getting better. In the United States, it started getting better in 1948 when President Truman desegregated the military. And then in 1964, we had the Civil Rights Act and that sort of thing. But we don't ever stop trying to get better. But a bunch of this critical race theory and stuff has only made it worse. And we're still just people, aren't we? And even if we disagree on a few things, can't we talk about them? Isn't that where you're coming from too, Stephen?
Absolutely. I think that we need to be able to come together as a country, because at the end of the day, they want us divided, right? In efforts to put forth a socialistic, communistic agenda, they want us divided. They need racial tension to exist. They need black people to be bitter, to be discontent and feel like we don't belong in this country, to feel like we're at odds with the white man. So what you see constantly in this day and age is this constant pushing and pulling and the initiation of a fight when it comes to mass media, when it comes to the institutions like entertainment and music and, you know, the educational system at large, you see that they're always kind of trying to push this fight between white and black, or white between between white and other different races and colors and creeds. And it's all to divide America. Unfortunately, we were, well, fortunately, at that time, we were doing better. At this point in time, it seems like we've regressed, right? We've become more at odds. The black community has become more discontent with our current system. And I have no doubt that it has everything to do with the narratives, with the way that things are put when it comes to society, this PC language and PC lingo that a lot of these white liberals as well as black liberals have joined together to try to reinstitute this new type of language that we're supposed to adhere to, in which, you know, old definitions are done away with when it comes to racism, what actual racism is, denigrating someone based on the color of skin and thinking that you're superior based on the color of skin. Now they have it where it's power plus prejudice equals racism. So black people can never be racist, quote unquote, according to them. And that white people are the racists. No matter what they do, they're always going to be racist. CRT, critical race theory, is another thing that plays into this. So they're trying to divide us. They're trying to divide the United States of America. And it's incumbent on us to bring us back together, to have these conversations, especially when it comes to race, and be honest about what's actually going on, instead of further contributing to divide that's destroying our country.
Yes, sir. And if it's doing it to our country, it's sure doing it to our military. And who would want to join the military to defend a country that you consider horrible, evil, and racist? That's nonsense. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Stephen Davis about Blexit. Stephen, what is Blexit? Talk about what it does.
Yeah, Blexit goes into the communities and they do a lot of community outreach. See, here's what I'll say. At Turning Point USA, we focus on the culture, right? So when it comes to Turning Point, we focus on, especially the main apparatus of Turning Point, we focus more on going to the college campus, right? And then you have Turning Point Faith, which focuses obviously on the Christianity side of things, the faith aspect of Turning Point USA. And then you have Turning Point Action, that focuses on the political realm, right? But what Blexit is they're the final piece, if you will, to completing our ability to be able to reach the culture, which is through the community, which is what Blexit focuses on. They focus on the community aspect. They focus on reaching the people within the community and helping Black people understand what it is that's going on in this world and trying to get them to be financially competent, to get them to be more economically literate, right? And trying to bring us together and bridge gaps and divides that were otherwise left alone. So I think that when it comes to Blexit, what they do is so phenomenally important to finally go to the actual communities. And they've done, I've seen so many community outreach programs that they've instituted. You know, different things that I'm in the works of planning with some of the Blexit leaders in different states. We're really trying to reach the people because the people have been left alone for so long. And like I said, the Democrat Party, the left, has co-opted these people and said that Black equals Democrat. But that is not the case. Blacks are a free people, just like any other race in America. So we just got to help them be more literate. We help them be more financially responsible, have more self-accountability, responsibility, and help them be integrate into society and not feel separate from the United States of America, but help them understand they are indeed a citizen of this country and that we need to start acting like it. So that's what Blexit really focuses on, and I love what Blexit has been doing.
Well, that certainly sounds like something our nation needs and needs plenty of. There's a lot more to talk about Blexit and Turning Point USA, and Stephen is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Stephen and I will be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Stephen Davis from Turning Point USA as we discuss Blexit. So, Stephen, I think we agree that there is segregation in our nation, a lot more than we would like to see and a lot more than there has been in the past. We all need to do something about it because it's not good for anybody. And I think at least a good part of that answer is, can we talk with each other, not argue, not you talk, but I don't listen. I'm just waiting for my turn to talk. If we can talk together and realize that we are fellow citizens, we are brothers, sisters, we can make things better. And if we don't, they sure won't get better. They'll get worse. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, we do need to be better for each other. We are America. All right. This is the only nation where we have this many different colors, creeds, different aspects that come together in one big melting pot called America, this social experiment, if you will. So we have to be able to come together. We have to be able to talk with one another. We have to be able to have a free exchange of ideas, which has been sorely lacking as of recent. You know, I spend a lot of my time going to these different college campuses almost on a weekly basis and talking to the kids, and especially the Turning Point chapters, and expressing to them different ideas of liberty and different notions of freedom and Americanism, patriotism, things of this nature, oftentimes going there to debunk the idea of or to debunk CRT and its effect that it's having on America, showcasing how CRT shouldn't be welcome in America and in polite society. Right. And it's oftentimes I go to these different college campuses and you have the dissenters that go and try to shut down these events. Right. They don't want the free exchange of ideas. They don't want good ideas being put out to the American people, because you cannot divide and conquer the American people if we have good ideas, if we're allowed to speak to each other, come together with one with another and be able to hash out our issues, our problems, and be able to come up with solutions. The left does not want that, right? They want to divide, divide, divide. And again, you can't conquer a nation unless you divide it, especially in a nation as strong as the United States of America. So we have to be able to come together. We have to be able to talk. We have to be able to have the hard conversations. We have to be able to have an honest look when it comes to race relations within the United States of America. We have to have an honest dialogue when it comes to such things as well, and be able to actually come up with solutions for the betterment of the United States of America and for the American people, which is not really happening in this day and age. Like I said, it's so much division, so much divisiveness, and that's typical when it comes to the left, and that's what they're trying to bring about so they can bring about a new regime, which will be antithetical to the whole American project and the United States of America itself.
I totally agree with you. One of the big points that keeps coming up is police being biased against blacks. I've been around an awful lot of police. There's a lot of police in my family, and I don't see that at all. But it is true that a higher percentage of black youth are involved in criminal type activities, and therefore cops do tend to watch them more often. Any ideas on what to do with that?
Well, we have to look at the culture first and foremost when it comes to this type of situation, right? So within black culture, especially when it comes to the music, okay, the predominant music within black culture is rap music. What does rap music promote? Four different things: drugs, violence, promiscuity, and a rebellion against authority figures, right? So when you put all that together and you constantly putting that and pumping it into the minds of young children, right, they're going to act delinquent. Same thing when it comes to a lack of fathers in the home. That's another big issue that we need to tackle within the black community, that you are you are skinned alive if you even bring up, okay? If you bring up the fatherless home rape in the United States of America when it comes to Black families, you get skinned alive. You're not supposed to talk about such things. But also, when it comes to this situation, we got to understand, if you don't have a father in the home, a disciplinarian in the home, a father figure to be able to show these young men and women, young men, hey, this is how you be a man. This is what you're supposed to embody. Young women, this is the type of man you're supposed to seek after. I'm supposed to be the example of what it is that you're supposed to be seeking after when you go out into the world. And I'm going to be, as a father figure, I'm going to be an upstanding citizen, upstanding individual, a very concrete man of principles and morals and values, right? Especially values that are contribute to the success of a society. But if you don't have that, there's nothing for these young men and women to latch onto, especially these young men who get wrapped up into the thug life, because you have these thugs who prey on these young men, right? And say, hey, little guy, I see don't you don't have a father figure. I'm going to be your father figure. I'm going to give you money, but I want you also to run drugs. I want you to do this delinquent behavior here and there. And now they're ensconced in this life of crime. And now the police are targeting such people. Why? Not targeting the people, but they're targeting crime. That's the whole point of the police. The police is to target crime. So if you're in a high crime ridden area, or if you're doing delinquent behavior, guess what? You have a higher propensity of being arrested, locked up, and thrown in prison. It's not that the police are going after Black people. It's due to the culture of the Black person in a Black community that the police are having to go and police crime. But if, you know, Black community is committing a disproportionate amount of crime, right? 13% of the population, which is the Black population, is committing over 50% of the violent crime in America. Therein lies a problem. So it's not that the police are targeting the Black community. The police are targeting crime, and it just so happens, unfortunately, due to the bad culture of the Black community, we are the ones committing the crime. So we are being targeted, quote unquote, because of the fact we are putting ourselves in that line of fire, so to speak. So we have to do better as a culture. We have to really sit down and talk about these issues that are plaguing the Black community so that we can do better for the future and be better citizens for this great country.
Yes, sir. I agree with that. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking about uniting America. We've got to stand together. And as Stephen has pointed out, there's forces trying to pull us apart. It's time for us to fight back together. And yes, there's imperfection everywhere. And yes, there's needs for improvement. But we won't get better if we don't identify something and say, gee, it's wrong that we're doing that. We need to change. And that's why I like the idea of us talking together. Stephen, I perceive that while there are lots of good organizations out there, that Turning Point USA and Blexit, the Blexit Foundation, is a significant movement towards what we've been talking about. Take a minute or two right now and talk about what it is, how people can plug into it, how people can join it, how people can learn more. And I'll bet you guys are a nonprofit and you'd accept donations too. So talk about all that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the lifeblood. The donors are the lifeblood of Turning Point USA, as well as the Blexit Foundation, which is now part of Turning Point USA. And it's so necessary to be able to sow financial seeds into these institutions and organizations that are on the front lines, the absolute front lines of this battle, right? To take back America, you have to educate the people. To educate the people, you need resources to be able to do so. Right. If we want to turn this country around, if we want to say that we stand on the courage of our convictions and are doing everything necessary and possible to keep this country from falling apart, then we need to sow into organizations like Turning Point USA and the Blexit Foundation. So when it comes to Blexit Foundation, if you want to sow seeds into them, a financial seed that will help us with our goal, with the spreading and the outreach into these communities to help people understand what it is that's going on in this country and help them understand the essence of our country and patriotism and all that sort of thing, go to blexitfoundation.org and donate today. Please, we need those funds to be able to combat the left and the ridiculousness that they're imposing on this country. Same thing with Turning Point USA. Go to turningpointusa.com and sow into this front lines apparatus that is really ready to take down this culture and switch this culture into something more conducive for the furthering of the United States of America. So blexitfoundation.org, and we appreciate any and all donations.
Now, that's also how people can plug into Blexit and get active in Blexit, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's all hands on deck at this point in time. So there's different career opportunities. There's general information when it comes to BlexitFoundation.org. We need any volunteers, any people that want to work for this wonderful organization as well. If you have any spare moments of your life, please not only sow into our ministry when it comes to financially, but sow into this organization when it comes to your time as well. Like I said, it is all hands on deck. Our country is failing. So it's time for us to go out into the communities and outreach and save our country.
Stephen, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your efforts to draw our nation together. You're a hardcore patriot. I'm proud to call you a brother.
Thank you very much for having me. I definitely appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, Dr. John Lott will discuss being armed in today's America. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. They take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code. Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the show John Lott. John has done a number of significant things in his life. The things he impacted me was his book, More Guns, Less Crime. The title kind of says it all. The more good citizens are armed and trained, the fewer of them will be targets to be attacked by criminals. John's an economist, a political commentator, and he is certainly a researcher and publisher on gun rights and our Second Amendment. He's the founder of and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, which is a nonprofit. And he worked in the Office of Justice Programs in the U.S. Department of Justice under Trump. He's got a PhD in economics from UCLA. So, John, welcome. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, John, you got a ton of things. You're not exactly a young kid. I'm pushing 82. What are you doing now?
I'm running the Crime Prevention Research Center. That's pretty much an 80, 90 hour a week job to have. But, you know, we do research on all sorts of crime issues, everything from policing to vote fraud issues to gun control issues. And anything that deals with crime, you know, we're happy to try to look at corporate crime or whatever. And it's a never-ending job. Obviously, violent crime has been increasing a lot the last couple of years, and there are obvious reasons why that's been the case, and we try to look at those types of issues.
Well, let's talk about that, since that's really a key issue right now, the rise of violent crime in the last couple of years. What do you see as cause and solution?
Well, I mean, I think the cause is very obvious. You make it less risky for criminals to commit crime, they go and commit more crime. And so you have it so that district attorneys in many parts of the country are refusing to prosecute violent criminals. You have liberal judges in many parts of the country have released half or even two-thirds of the inmates from local jails. You have police budgets being cut and making it more difficult for police to do their jobs in other ways. You have bail reform that makes it so that even people who have committed murder get released on very little or no bail. And so they go out and commit more crimes. And, you know, you have situations where it's not rocket science. If you make it so it's not risky for criminals to go and commit crime, they're going to go and commit more crime.
You know, that just is plain common sense. The more you think about it, the less you have to think about it. If you make it easy for them, they'll do it. Why wouldn't they? I mean, that's pretty much what we're doing here, isn't it?
No, I think so. I mean, it's obvious to me and obvious to you. Unfortunately, it's not obvious to everybody there, but we can still try to get that information across. The bizarre thing right now is that we seem to be living in a world where the same people who want to make it less risky for criminals to commit crime in terms of law enforcement also want to make it less risky for them in terms of making it difficult or costly for law-abiding citizens to be able to go and protect themselves.
That is weird, because the last time I checked, and I've got a lot of experience, not personally, but family and friends in law enforcement, the bad guys don't have any trouble getting guns. And the easier you make it for them, why wouldn't they stop? And the city councils seem to be the ones who control the support our police get. And most of the city councils that I've looked into are not supportive of their police department, or not as supportive as they need. So we've got an environment that doesn't support the plain old honest citizen. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I mean, they don't support police, and they, you know, basically it's where you have strong Democrat control of the cities. You run into these places, but it's also been true for members of Congress and for other politicians that are there. They want to make it very difficult for police to do their job. They want to take away legal protections that police officers have. They want to cut budgets. You know, Biden, for the first almost 2 years of his presidency, or at least a good portion of that, was calling for looking at only crime in terms of gun control type issues. And few people seem to realize that over 92% of violent crime has absolutely nothing to do with guns. He had no interest really in helping out the police. But even recently, when he's gone and kind of disowned the disfunding of police, he doesn't seem to recognize that that's just part of the issue there. I mean, you can go and arrest people, but if you don't prosecute them, if you don't put them in jail, it kind of undoes whatever good the police have done there. And yet Biden refuses to criticize any of the district attorneys who are refusing to prosecute violent criminals. He refuses to criticize the bail reform. He refuses to criticize the liberal judges who are letting out large numbers of inmates. I mean, they were letting them out well into 2021 and even into 2022, when it was clear that the only people that were ever suffering really that much from COVID were people who were old, you know, and over 65 or so. But the people who are in jail are in their late teens or in their 20s or in their 30s. You have very few people who are in jail much beyond that. And yet you still don't hear a peep out of Biden criticizing any of those proposals that are going on.
Unfortunately, sir, you're absolutely right. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Dr. John Lott. John, we've got a little bit of time left. One of the things you have done is published a number of books. Again, More Guns, Less Crime is my favorite of them all.
Well, thank you.
And the good thing about your books is that they're educational. They put out just plain truth, facts, usable information. Name a couple of the ones that are out there and how people can get a copy if they want to buy one. I think that's something most of my listeners would want to know about.
Well, thanks. I mean, all the information we have is on our website at crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. My most recent book is Gun Control Myths. It goes through 45 different claims that have been made about guns that people hear about in the media and from gun control advocates, to try to go through the data and point out what's wrong with them. But my other books include things like The War on Guns and The Bias Against Guns. And they go through different aspects. The Bias Against Guns kind of talks about how the media covers guns and why people have the views that they do on guns. If people constantly hear about bad things that happen with guns and virtually never hear about the benefits, you can't expect them to have different views than they do. The media, if you watch news stories on guns, people probably think that they have more information about guns than they have on almost any other issue. But few would know from just listening to news stories that guns are used offensively by people about five times more frequently each year to stop crime than they're used in the commission of crime. And the War on Guns talks about a lot of the public health research. I mean, obviously, people have seen kind of the implications of public health claims during COVID, but I would argue they've been just as inaccurate and misleading in many of their discussions about guns. And it has a real impact on people's perceptions. And so anyway, those are just a few of the books besides More Guns, Less Crime, which came out originally. The first edition came out in 1998. The third edition came out in 2010.
A great book. I have one last question for you. We're about out of time. One of the things we haven't discussed is I read a statistic recently that said about criminal situations involving guns, not in gun-free zones, so where honest citizens can be carrying guns legally, over half of those were stopped by legal citizens carrying guns. Is that a fair statistic?
Well, I think that's from research that we had done, but specifically, it looks at what they call active shooting cases. So these are cases using the FBI definition where a gun's fired in public, not part of some other type of crime like a robbery or a gang fight over drug turf. And it includes anything from one person being targeted and missed all the way up to a mass public shooting. And if you look at the data from 2014 to 2021, and exclude cases where it's illegal or banned from law-abiding citizens carrying guns, what in fact you find is exactly what you say, that over half of those active shooting cases were stopped by civilians legally carrying guns. And people can find that on our website, too. If they click on our original research section and scroll down, they'll find that information.
John, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Thank you for your nonstop efforts to make our nation safer. I really appreciate you. You're one of my heroes. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for being there. I greatly appreciate it.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillard. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum, PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget. Never forgotten.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Navy vet Reggie said he really enjoyed reading your book, Colonel, The Smiling Ranger. He likes your humor.
Thank you, Reggie. As you know, the book is a series of short, mostly funny stories about my time in uniform. They were fun living and writing about, and not everybody appreciates my humor, so I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate it, Colonel, really.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, Army and Marine mom Amy was outraged by the president refusing to take responsibility for the horrible abandonment of Afghanistan and the crazy way he didn't handle the Chinese balloon. Her kids are defending this goofy leadership.
Amy, I regret to say, yes, your children are defending unworthy leaders in a falling nation. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
On 27 April 1805, after marching 500 miles from Egypt, U.S. agent William Eaton led a small force of U.S. Marines and Berber mercenaries against the Tripolitan port city of Derna. They were on a mission to depose Yusuf Karamanli, the ruling Pasha of Tripoli, who had seized power from his brother, Hamat Karamanli, a pasha who was sympathetic to the U.S. The first Barbary War had begun 4 years earlier when President Thomas Jefferson ordered U.S. Navy vessels to the Mediterranean Sea in protest of continuing raids against U.S. ships by pirates from the Barbary states, Morocco, Algeria, Tunis, and Tripolitania. American sailors were often abducted along with the captured booty and ransomed back to the U.S. at an exorbitant price. After 2 years of minor confrontations, sustained action began in June 1803 when a small U.S. expeditionary force attacked Tripoli Harbor in present-day Libya. In April 1805, supported by the heavy guns of the USS Argus and the USS Hornet, William Eaton's team captured Derna and deposed Yusuf Karamanli. Lieutenant Presley O'Bannon, commanding the Marines, performed so heroically in the battle that Harmut Karamanli presented him with an elaborately designed sword that now serves as the pattern for the swords carried by the Marine officers. The phrase, "to the shores of Tripoli," from the official song of the U.S. Marine Corps, also had its origins in the Derna campaign.
That's why I wanted you to be able to read that one, Skip. You Marines rightfully should be proud of that. And on 27 April 1813, after surviving two dangerous exploratory expeditions into uncharted areas of the West, Zebulon Pike died during a battle in the War of 1812. By the time he became a general in 1812, Pike had already faced many perilous situations. He joined the Army when he was 15, eventually took various military posts on the American frontier. In 1805, Pike was ordered to lead 20 soldiers on a reconnaissance of the Upper Mississippi River. Shortly after returning, Pike's team was sent to explore the headwaters of the Arkansas River, a route that took him into Colorado. There, Pike saw the towering peak that now bears his name, attempted to climb it, grossly underestimating the height of the mountain, and dressed in thin cotton uniforms, Pike and his men struggled with deep snow and sub-zero temperatures before finally abandoning their ascent. During his second expedition, Pike also became lost and wandered into Spanish-controlled territory. A Spanish patrol arrested him and took him into custody. Although Pike was truly lost, he had hoped the Spanish would capture him so that he could see more of their territory, and it worked. Failing to recognize they were providing Pike with a golden opportunity to spy on the territory, the Spanish obligingly moved their prisoner first to Santa Fe and then to Chihuahua before releasing him near Louisiana. Impressed with his daring and reputation, Pike was promoted to Brigadier General during the War of 1812. He was killed in 1813 while leading an attack on British troops in Toronto. He was 34 years old. And this is important to me because I met my wife in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and one of our first dates was to Pike's Peak.
Well, Colonel, for me personally, I would have wanted to be captured just so they would take me south to warmer weather.
Ooh, good thoughts there. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, an evening of bingo in Pensacola, Florida took a strange twist on January 4th. Two women attempting to walk up to the doors of the bingo hall seeking jumper cables to help start one of their vehicles. The women noticed a man and a woman standing outside of the business and asked them about jumper cables. The couple responded negatively, and when the victims tried to go around the couple to enter the building, the woman who'd been standing outside attacked one of them. At this point, the man drew a handgun and allegedly hit one of the women on the left side of the head. He then repeatedly pointed the firearm at the woman and started firing in their direction as they were trying to run away. One of the victims ran back to her vehicle and left the scene. The other woman was able to run into the building. When the assailant attempted to follow her into the bingo hall, however, two armed citizens were able to stop his attack and hold him at gunpoint until deputies arrived.
Well, thanks, Colonel. Once again, we see the immense danger surrounding transitional spaces. Every week, when I choose the scenario, it's just a random search that I do on the internet. But almost inevitably, most of the scenarios that come up all involve some type of home invasion or a parking lot incident. It's much easier to defend yourself inside your own home because you have the home court advantage. There are locks on your doors and windows. You have a surveillance camera as well as motion sensors. The neighbors and other family members are also watching out for you as well. You know who belongs in the neighborhood and who does not. But out in the general public, the opposite is true. It's quite legal for armed criminals to frequent parking lots and to even hang out in them looking for the next victim. After all, they have every right to be there right up until they commit a crime. But by then, it's too late. That's why you have to be on high alert while walking through these areas. Here are a few things these ladies could have done better to keep themselves safer. First, always trust your gut instincts. Your gut instincts are the sum total of every experience you've ever had in your life. Now, granted, some of us have bad instincts, but most of us do a pretty good job collecting and analyzing the bad things that happen to us. When you're walking through a parking lot and you see someone you don't trust for whatever reason, then try to avoid them. Go around them. Don't worry about their feelings. Worry more about the bad things that could happen to you if you trust someone you shouldn't. These ladies were right to try and go around them and into the building, but it would have been better to not approach them in the first place. Second, I'll never totally understand why women, some of the most vulnerable in our society, insist on remaining unarmed. When criminals look for victims, they target the weakest members of society. That means they look for children and the elderly, as well as the disabled, and also women. All these groups have one thing in common. They lack the physical strength, speed, and aggression that most violent criminals already have. According to FBI crime stats, the person most likely to attack you is a male and between the ages of 15 and 34. The best way a woman can keep from becoming a victim is to carry a gun. At close ranges, it doesn't take a lot of skill to point and shoot. Of course, you should get all the practice and training you can in the safe and effective use of handguns, and you should also learn the laws of deadly force. Most concealed carry classes across the nation give you all of these things. Ladies, it's getting rougher out there by the day. So if you don't want to be victimized, then take the initiative to get armed and get trained. It's a decision you can live with. Frontlines of Freedom salutes these two ladies for acting quickly and for getting away. And we especially thank the two armed citizens who came to their rescue.
Well said. Our movie of the month is The Chinese Tutankhamun. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog to get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd really appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at Denny at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, General Michael Flynn will join us. Then Operation Homefront will discuss April, the month of the military child. Then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver, and General Chris Petty will discuss the battle of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on Frontlines of Freedom. Please help us get this call to the action book into the hands of all Americans. And as we've said before, it is now available in Spanish.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes for our 800th show on Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud, Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.